I stand on the platform of our party. We will not participate in foreign wars, and we will not send our army, naval, or air forces to fight in foreign lands outside of the Americas, except in case of attack.
That was the voice of President Franklin Delano Roosevelt in the summer of 1940. Precedent was being broken. He would be the first man to ever run for the presidency for a third term. 1 year and 1 month after defeating Wendell Willkie, the president would speak before an extraordinary session of Congress.
Senators and representatives, I have the distinguished honor of presenting the President of the United States.
Speaker of the House Sam Rayburn has just introduced the president. It is 12:29 p.m., Monday, December 8th, 1941. Another precedent is about to be broken. For the first time in the 9 years that he has been in office, cheers and applause will ring out from both sides of the historic chamber, Democrats and Republicans alike. There is good reason. This is the day following the Japanese air attack at the naval base Navy men affectionately call Pearl. This is the story of December 7th, 1941, the Japanese attack on Pearl Harbor. It is November 1941. Europe is at war. 4 months earlier, in June, Germany attacks Russia, and the following month, Great Britain and Russia sign a mutual aid pact. But there are rumblings also in the Far East. It was in July of 1940 that President Roosevelt signed an order freezing all Japanese assets in the United States. 3 months later, in Washington, an historic event took place. The peacetime drafting of young men into the armed forces. Listen closely. In the audience is a mother who knows her son's draft number. President Roosevelt speaks.
Secretary of War will now draw the first number. The first number drawn by the Secretary of War is serial number 158.
Now the war in Europe was becoming part of American life. The draft, too, became important in the oncoming presidential campaign. President Roosevelt was running for a third term.
We are telling the world that we are free, and we intend to remain free and at peace. We are free to live and love and laugh. We face the future with confidence and with courage. We are Americans.
His opponent, Wendell Willkie.
And let me tell you something else that one man rule always leads to. It always leads to the road to war.
The president again.
I repeat again that I stand on the platform of our party. We will not participate in foreign wars, and we will not send our army, naval, or air forces to fight in foreign lands outside of the Americas, except in case of attack.
Wendell Willkie.
More than 9 million of our fellow citizens are without jobs. We have little equipment for an army, and we have only a few hundred modern military airplanes. That is the record, and I challenge the third-term candidate to prove it false.
In November, the nation voted. More than 27 million votes for Roosevelt, 22 million for Willkie. 38 states in the Electoral College for Roosevelt, 10 for Willkie. 2 months later, Roosevelt spoke of the danger to the United States.
Never before, since Jamestown and Plymouth Rock, has our American civilization been in such danger as now. We must be the great arsenal of democracy. For us, this is an emergency as serious as war itself.
To most Americans, the danger zone was Europe, Germany, and Italy. Charles A. Lindbergh.
These wars in Europe are not wars in which our civilization is defending itself against some Asiatic intruder. There is no Genghis Khan or Xerxes marching against our Western nations. This is simply one more of those age-old struggles within our own family of nations. If we enter fighting for democracy abroad, we may end by losing it at home.
To the president's aid came his recent opponent, Wendell Willkie.
Providing the aid we give to Britain is effective, it offers the best, the very best, clear chance for us to keep out of war. Hitler, in my judgment, will make war on us or on our friends and allies in this hemisphere when, as, and if he chooses.
On August 18, 1941, a bill goes before Congress to renew the draft, extending the term of service from 1 year to 30 months. In one of the most dramatic sessions in United States congressional history, the House of Representatives passes the bill by one vote, 203 to 202. The United States will be able to keep its men in the armed forces. Pearl Harbor is less than 4 months away. The summer comes. America is still at peace. What was the United States like that summer of 1941? New Chevrolets could be bought for less than $700. Lou Gehrig retired from the New York Yankees, still claiming he'd licked the incurable illness that afflicted him. The invasion of England was no longer expected. Charlie McCarthy and Edgar Bergen were household radio names, and the first of the giveaways, the pot of gold, glued millions to their radios. Joe Louis had defended his heavyweight crown against Arturo Godoy, and Mr. Average American was earning $2,000 a year. Richard Rodgers had not yet begun his collaboration with Oscar Hammerstein. The musical comedy sensation Oklahoma was still 2 years away. The summer went. Now ominous reports were coming out of the Pacific. Americans who had always expected to eventually be fighting Hitler and Mussolini were now hearing rumblings in the Far East. Japan. Japan, the country with the bamboo roofs. The country that could be set aflame by one small bomb. Japan. The country of little men with ancient ideas. Japan. Unable to conquer China after years of terrible warfare. Japan was making aggressive moves in the Far East. Japan, a quick history of aggression. In 1929, China released a version of Japan's famed Tanaka Memorial Papers. The blueprint of domination engineered by Prime Minister Geichi Tanaka. It called for aggressive moves in Manchuria, Mongolia, India, Asia Minor, Central Asia, the archipelago. In 1931, the execution of the plan began. Japan invaded Manchuria. 6 years later, the attack on China. In December of 1937, the United States gunboat Panay was sunk by Japanese planes on the Yangtze River. Three years later, they formed an alliance with Germany and Italy. October 1941. General Hideki Tojo assumes power. He becomes premier. His name will be a curse on every American GI's lips for the next 4 years. Every Japanese soldier will be known as Tojo. His cabinet is filled with Army and Navy officers. They smell of gunpowder. The Japanese doctrine? A series of behavior codes that are impossible for Western minds to understand. Kodo, the way of the emperor. Shinto, the way of the gods. Bushido, death for disobedience. Kamikaze, a glorious death for the empire. Banzai, 10,000 years, forever. It is November 10th, 1941. A warning comes to Americans from Prime Minister Winston Churchill of Great Britain.
I take this occasion to say, and it is my duty to say, that should the United States become involved in war with Japan, the British declaration will follow within the hour.
Events move quickly. 4 days after Churchill's speech, Tojo's special peace envoy, Saburo Kurusu, arrives in San Francisco to assist Japanese Ambassador Nomura in talks with Secretary of State Cordell Hull. Historical evidence indicates he knew not of his nation's plans.
You all know how difficult my mission is, but I'll do all I can to make it a successful one for the sake of two countries, Japan and the United States.
Now events move even more quickly. 3 days later, the Japanese envoys presented their demands to Cordell Hull. To American reporters, Envoy Kurusu said, "I have come to make a touchdown." Unbeknown to him, the Tokyo signals called for him to be a decoy. He would not score the touchdown he thought he came for, peace. Neither would he fumble the mission he was sent on, camouflage. Japanese demands were formally turned down by the United States on November 17th. 1 week and 1 day later, November 25th, United States counter-demands were made. At precisely the same moment from Tonkan Bay in the Kuril Islands of Japan, 72 warships of the Imperial Japanese Navy, under the command of Admiral Chuichi Nagumo, lifted anchor. Under complete radio silence, the war fleet, including 6 aircraft carriers, headed into the open sea. Their destination, southeast, the Hawaiian Islands. On November 27th, Major General Walter C. Short, Commanding General, Hawaiian Department in charge of Army defenses at Pearl Harbor, and Rear Admiral Husband E. Kimmel, Chief of the Pacific Fleet, were sent war alerts by Secretary of War Stimson. All Pacific base commanders, including General Douglas MacArthur in the Philippine Islands, were warned that peace negotiations with Japan, for all practical purposes, were over. It is December 3rd, 1941. Still under radio silence, the Japanese attacking force refuels at sea. They await the final message. Aboard the 6 aircraft carriers, 260 attacking planes. It is December 5th. The Japanese attack force is 900 miles from Pearl Harbor. Now Admiral Nagumo, aboard his flagship, receives the fateful message from Tokyo. Climb Mount Nitaka. Translation, attack, 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 as previously planned. It is 1:22 p.m. New York time. At home in the United States, most Americans were going through the typical pleasant comforts of a quiet Sunday afternoon. For those reading the New York Times, there were ominous, ironical stories headlining the front page. One headline, placed prominently over the photograph of the Emperor of Japan, read, "Roosevelt appeals to Hirohito after new threat in Indochina." A bit of irony also on the front page of the New York Times this Sunday, December 7th. The headline, "Navy superior to any," says Knox. The story told of the annual report of Navy activities released just the day before by Secretary of the Navy Frank Knox. He concluded his report with, "Our Navy is second to none. Over Hawaii, the bomb bay doors of the Japanese planes are open. The torpedo planes are ready. Below, combat ships of the United States Pacific Fleet. At their berths, majestically lined up on Battleship Row, lie the pride of the United States Pacific Fleet, the battle wagons, traditionally named after states of the United States, massive but silent in the dawn hours of December 7th. The battleships Arizona, Nevada, Maryland, Tennessee, California, Oklahoma, and West Virginia." It is 2:21 p.m. Washington time, 8:51 a.m. in Pearl Harbor. The attack has been going on for almost an hour. The destruction during the first 15 minutes was incredible. The battleship Arizona had already blown up. The California, Oklahoma, West Virginia, and Nevada were sunk. Battleship Row was aflame with the twisted burning wreckage of the great ships. In Washington at 2:21, as the second wave of attacking Japanese planes came in for their first run, Japanese envoys Kurusu and Nomura were ushered into Secretary of State Cordell Hull's office. They were originally scheduled to deliver Japan's answer to the United States peace proposals at 1 o'clock, but they called and said they would be late. They arrived at Secretary Hull's office at 2 p.m. 21 minutes later, they stood before the United States Secretary of State with the 14-point message from Tokyo, which concluded with the words, "It is impossible to reach an agreement through further negotiations." Glancing at the papers, Hull angrily told the envoys that he had never seen a document so crowded with falsehoods and distortions. Nomura and Kurusu left for their embassy, amazed at the anger of Secretary Hull. When they arrived at their embassy, they were told for the first time of the attack on Pearl. It is 2:26 p.m., New York time.
It's a long one down to around the 3-yard line. Ward Cuff takes it. He's cutting up to his left. He's over the 10. Nice block there by Lehman. Cuff's still going. He's up to the 25. And now he's hit and hit hard about the 27-yard line. Bruiser Kennard made the tackle.
We interrupt this broadcast to bring you this important bulletin from the United Press. Flash, Washington. The White House announces Japanese attack on Pearl Harbor.
Bulletin after bulletin came over the air.
The White House also reported today a simultaneous air attack on Army and Navy bases in Manila. This report followed the President's declaration that all Army and Navy bases on the island of Oahu in Hawaii are now under air attack.
Here is what has happened. President Roosevelt phoned Secretary Early half an hour ago that the Japanese had attacked Pearl Harbor, the United States naval base on Oahu Island in the Hawaiian Islands. This means that war is underway between Japan and the United States.
Henry L. Stimson today ordered the entire Army into uniform, effective tomorrow. His order applied to every one of the Army's 1,600,000, including the thousands of officers and men on duty in administrative posts in the War Department building who heretofore have been permitted to wear civilian clothes.
An eyewitness account of the bombing at Manila.
Manila has just been bombed. In fact, right now it is being bombed. And without warning, Japanese bombers started bombing Fort William McKinley, Nichols Airfield, and the RCA transmitting station. At 3:09, without warning.
Right now, the moon is shining absolutely full. It's too faint. Stand out like mirrors.
And there's no wonder that an enemy bomber would pick out any spot
around this part of Manila tonight. It isn't the fault of the blackout. There isn't a light shining any place. But old man Moon just wouldn't stay back out.